Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 24th of September. Our guest this hour is the author of Boost Your Brain, the New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. He is the founder and chair of the Neurology Institute for Brain Health, where he serves as chief medical officer. He starts his book, just to put you in the proper frame of mind for all of this. You've walked into a meeting and you're confronted with a familiar face. You've met the person a half dozen times. You've talked about the weather, about to say hello, when all of a sudden, you realize you have no idea what his name is. You know it, but why in the world can't I remember? Well, maybe by the end of the hour, those moments will be less frequent than they may be for you right now. Our guest this hour is Majid Fatouhi. He's an internationally recognized neurologist and author of two previous books and many scientific articles about brain health. He spent 25 years doing research, clinical work, and teaching at Johns Hopkins and Harvard Medical School. He is the recipient of the Distinguished Teaching Award from the American Academy of Neurology. And this is interesting. His TV series, you may have seen, Fight Alzheimer's Early, has aired on PBS stations all over the country. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Fatouhi. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org and Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Dr. Fatouhi, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
A lot of what you write about, you describe as cutting edge. It means what? We're learning much more about the brain than we ever knew before just in the last few years?
Yes, there are sort of revolutionary new discoveries about our brain and the neuroplasticity in our brain. This means that our brain has the capacity to grow at any age. We used to think that the plasticity was primarily a phenomenon for children, but now we know that if you have a 75-year-old, we can actually alter and improve their brain.
Oh, that's good to know, isn't it?
Yeah, I've written several scientific articles about it, and in our NeuroExpand Brain Center, we do before and after brain MRIs, and we can show our patients how the memory part of their brain, the hippocampus, has grown in size with our brain fitness program.
And that hippocampus is a very important part of the brain?
Yes. Hippocampus is a brain structure the size of your thumb. There's one on the left, one on the right. And this is a part of your brain that is critical for short-term memory. Mm. So I'm going to give you a phone number, and I'll ask you to memorize that. How's that, Kathleen?
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. 410.
Mm-hmm.
494.
494.
0191.
0191.
Okay. Don't write it down now.
So. Okay. Oh, okay.
So I want you to memorize this phone number, and your audience can also memorize it. So memorize it. Now, as you're memorizing it, as I'm going to ask you again some 10 minutes and remind me if I forget, you're churning up your hippocampus. The hippocampal neurons are hard at work, and the rest of your brain is engaged in sort of talking with me, but the memory part of your brain, the hippocampus, is particularly active. Now, if you didn't have a good hippocampus, you would have difficulty memorizing a phone number or a name. What is new, what is cutting edge, is that hippocampus shrinks with aging more so than other parts of the brain. That's the bad news. Also, hippocampus grows rather easily more so than the other parts of the brain.
Mm.
So you have a role in determining the size of your hippocampus. Now, does that matter? Well, who cares? It turns out that people who have a larger hippocampus are more resistant to the effects of aging on the brain and against having Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if you want to protect your brain against the effects of aging and Alzheimer's, you really want to bulk up the size of your hippocampus. And scientific research shows that you can do that in as short a time as 3 months.
Hmm. That's amazing. And the book is filled with information on how to do that, as well as to assess how healthy you are and your brain is at this at this particular moment in time. And let's start with the assessment of a person's health, because before you get heavy duty into brain exercises, you really think that we need a health assessment. And it's an unusual assessment, doctor, because you're looking at vitamin levels in the body as well.
Yes, Kathleen. I think it's important that you get an inventory of your health from your head to toe, because so many other medical issues can affect a brain's performance and your brain health. For example, if you have low thyroid level, if you have heart failure, if you have emphysema, if you're going through hormonal fluctuations of menopause, if you're a man and have low testosterone level, if you have low back pain and taking medications, all of those things affect your brain and your ability to remember names and phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're forgetting things, if you have memory lapses, we need to know what is the specific cause of memory lapse in you, which is not necessarily the same as the cause of memory loss for your neighbor or your family members. Now, I have a list of these medical conditions in my book, and a person who's interested can review them. But basically, we go from head to toe. You know, can you hear well? Can you see well? Do you have any dental problems? Do you snore at night? You know, do you have thyroid problems? Do you have neck pain? You just go from one organ, and there's a table that you can sort of check in and see at the bottom how many body organs need more work and treatment.
Mm-hmm. And is it true? I know that there's a whole portion of the book that looks at exercise, Dr. Fatui, that you have to have a healthy body in order to be able to work on a healthy mind. The two are linked, and how so?
This is another piece of new evidence that I find most exciting. Scientists have been able to show that when you exercise, you generate new brain cells in your hippocampus. Literally, new cells grow. Just like seeds may grow into little plants, these new neurons turn into functioning, mature neurons. There's no surgery involved. There's no stem cell. There's no special medications. Exercise helps you have more new cells in your brain and helps to grow the size of your hippocampus. My first and best recommendation for people who are interested in improving their brain health is to exercise. Well, the question is how much exercise? Any exercise is better than no exercise. But on average, you want to walk about 6 miles a week or something equivalent to that.
Mm-hmm. And what about, we keep hearing all these different recommendations. You should do 20 minutes a day. You can do 2 10-minute spurts. You should do 30 minutes a day. Do doctors have a consensus on this now or not?
Not really, but I have done a thorough review of literature, and my recommendation is as follows. I recommend that you increase your physical endurance, your physical stamina, gradually with the goal of 4 or 5 days of exercise. The exercise sessions that I recommend would have 2 sessions, 30 minutes of aerobic followed by 15 minutes of strength training and high interval intensity training, or HIIT. In other words, I have combined all the different recommendations into one regimen, which means you exercise for 30 minutes, you warm up for 5-10 minutes, and then you build a good sweat over the next 20 minutes, and then you do some weight training, and then you end it with 10 sessions of one-minute bursts. Those one-minute bursts seem to have real benefits for the brain, more so than if you did 10 minutes of moderate exercise without the burst.
And that actually grows that hippocampus?
Yes.
It does.
It is amazing, isn't it, Kathleen?
Well, it is amazing.
It is. I mean, that's why I wrote the book, because I thought, you know, we need to tell the world about this thing. You know, we can be proactive about our brain health. You know, we can take responsibility for the health of our brain just as much as we can take responsibility for the health of our teeth. You know, people do something about their teeth every day. What do they do about their brain health?
Right.
Most people don't realize that brain is an organ, not much different than your heart or a kidney or liver or your lungs. There are things that harm your brain and there are things that help your brain flourish.
Do we know why exercising can help grow your brain? What's the reason for that?
Yeah. Again, I don't mean to sort of promote my book, but I have detailed information about what you just asked. There's one reason, which is obvious, that's increased blood flow to the brain. But also, there is a peptide. There's a protein called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. The levels of this protective protein increase in proportion to the level of your exercise, and more so with the level of your fitness. So when you improve your cardiovascular fitness, the BDNF levels in your brain rise, and BDNF helps to heal and grow your neurons in the hippocampus. So the two ways are increased oxygen and blood flow, and the second is BDNF levels.
You've also done a major study, Dr. Fatui, on the kinds of foods that we eat and whether or not there are foods that are good for the brain. And it would appear to me that some of what's on your list are foods that have been recommended for overall good health as well, that they're antioxidant foods, they're good for keeping your body healthy.
Yes. A heart-healthy diet is also a brain-healthy diet.
Mm.
My recommendation to people is to make sure you don't eat too much. You know, obesity is a major risk factor for memory loss and cognitive decline with aging. The best brain food, though, is DHA. DHA is an omega-3 fatty acid you find in fish such as salmon. You can also take it in the form of supplements. And DHA has been shown to improve memory in a double-blind placebo-controlled study of people who are 50 years and older. DHA, at a biological level, improves blood flow to the brain, increases BDNF levels, reduces inflammation, and has been shown to help grow size of hippocampus.
Hmm.
I take DHA every day myself, and my wife takes it, and I have two daughters, Nora and Maya, 6 and 8 years old, and they take it too.
They do?
Yes, I was on Dr. Oz's show once, and he said he gives it to his dogs.
Oh, no. His dogs will eat that?
Well, DHA is really, really good for your brain. I have no hesitation in recommending DHA because there's a strong evidence that DHA helps brain health and memory.
Hmm. Well, I know for certain that it helps your heart, too.
Yes, DHA has benefits for heart as well. It also is very important for your eye health. About 40% of the membranes and neurons in the brain are made up of omega-3 fatty acid, most of which is DHA. So for kids who have attention deficit disorder, for people who may have frequent memory lapses, for people who may have had concussion and can't think clearly, for people who are getting older and have concern about Alzheimer's disease, to all these patients, I recommend DHA.
We are going to go back to how you memorize phone numbers and to that story that I told at the beginning, because I'm sure many of you listening can identify. This happens to me a lot. You meet somebody and you've lived a while and you know you've met them and you're trying to remember where you've met them and you can't remember the name, and it's an important thing to remember names, and you're just in awe of people who can remember all names, like many politicians can do that. I'm just amazed when that happens. So how can you reach a point where you remember all of that? How do you do that? Well, he has exercises in this book as well. The book is Boost Your Brain, The New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. And our guest is the author of that book, Dr. Fajid Fatui. He's an interesting person. He's an internationally recognized neurologist. He's written a couple other books on brain health. He's been teaching and done clinical and research work at Johns Hopkins and Harvard Medical School, and is the creator and medical officer of the Brain Center. He also has a TV series, Fight Alzheimer's Early, which has aired on PBS stations. Here's how you reach us. I wonder if you can remember this phone number. See, this is one I know so well, I can't, but I can't remember if I've said it or not because I say it so much. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. You can always leave messages for us there. So we'll be with you and learn some brain exercises so we can remember names and numbers and important things in our lives as we continue our conversation. Boost your brain this hour. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. An email, a doctor from Wayne in Krakow, who says he finds the link between HC and dementia very interesting. However, is it proven that the larger hippocampus results in lower dementia rates, or is it just a corollary?
There's a specific scientific evidence that shows that people who have a larger size hippocampus do not develop symptoms of dementia even if they have Alzheimer's pathology in their brain.
Hmm.
In other words, even if there is some Alzheimer's in your brain, if your hippocampus is large, you will not have symptoms. This is really striking and tells us that we can be proactive in making our brain resilient to the effects of Alzheimer's disease decades later.
Well, that's quite remarkable, isn't it? That's important.
I know, Kathleen. One of the things that bother me about this field is that there are plenty of bad news about, you know, how Alzheimer's is becoming more frequent, how our economy will not be able to afford paying for patients with Alzheimer's disease. There are also a lot of good news which get lost in the mountain of bad news. The good news is that you can be proactive to keep your brain healthy both now and in the future. And I think that we need to emphasize the fact that people can take an active role in boosting their brain.
Annie is our next caller from Holman. Hi.
Hi there. I just have a question for the doctor or the author of the book. In your book, do you have exercises or recommend supplements for traumatic brain injuries? My son was in a car accident and suffered a severe traumatic brain injury. And a year and a half ago, we still notice he's, you know, constantly and gradually, you know, doing better and better and better with his memory or with his cognitive thinking. You know, is there, do you recommend or do you have exercises in your book or a section that kind of touches on that, traumatic brain injuries?
Yes, there's a chapter in the book specifically devoted to concussions. It's chapter 13 of my book, and I talk about how and why traumatic brain injury impacts your brain both now and in the future, and what are some of the best ways you can reduce the effects of concussion in your brain. One thing most people don't realize, though, is that even a minor concussion that may not cause confusion or dizziness at the time of injury would make an impact on the brain and does cause a little scar, a little tear inside your brain. And for that reason, I really think that we should protect our children, our teenagers and young adults, and educate them about how to avoid concussions during football, hockey, or other contact sports.
Hmm. Are there certain sports you particularly worry about? You mentioned football. That would be an obvious. Are there others?
Yes. The football and hockey are the two major ones. Obviously, rugby and other sports, there's a lot of traumatic brain injury. And, people who go for a bike ride should wear helmets. You know, you need to protect your brain. You protect your head on a daily basis and use common sense as if there's a risk of head trauma,
right,
don't do it or have protection.
Thanks, Annie. Tom in Frog Point. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I would like to ask if I'm concerned about note-taking. We moved our aunt to a nursing home, and she had had notes on everything, the product she bought, and the price and where she got it and what it was for. And We ended up with a whole garbage bag full of notes as we moved her. I've always made a lot of notes, and I depend on them quite a bit, but I've been lately working on trying to do some short-term memory training just to remember little things that I need to do. And sometimes as you're going through your daily process, whether it's housekeeping or heading for the garden or whatever, you have 15 little chores to do, and you got to keep them all in your memory. And I was just wondering about building up your short-term memory.
Yes, I strongly recommend that you tease your memory and take advantage of every opportunity to memorize things. With regards to taking notes, I think it's a good idea to keep the notes, but don't use them. For example, if you have to go grocery shopping, make a list of things you have to buy, put it in your pocket, and then go do your grocery shopping, and only at the end, double-check to see if you bought everything or not. The other thing you could do to tease your memory is to memorize phone numbers. You know, more and more people are relying on their cell phones to keep phone numbers of their family and friends, and they have lost the art and ability to memorize phone numbers. The point is this. You need to tone up your memory muscles as much as you can in order to keep them strong as you age. Just because you age, it does not mean that you should have more frequent memory lapses or senior moments. You should not. You should tell yourself, I'm going to have an excellent memory, and I'm going to work such that next year my memory will be better than it is this year. And it is doable, and it is achievable. You need to have a change in your attitude, in the way you approach this whole issue of a brain, memory, and aging. And people who do that become more successful, because the more you memorize things, the better you get at it, and you will soon find out that you're doing much better than you did three years earlier.
Hmm. There's also, I've always found that when I'm under pressure, my brain freezes. It's really hard to remember things when you're worried that you're not going to remember things. And there's a component of contemplation, of meditation in your book as well, which if you're in that state, I think it's much easier for your brain to flourish.
That's right. Stress is really toxic to the brain. When you're under a great deal of stress, levels of stress hormone called cortisol rise in your body and in your brain. And your hippocampus is particularly sensitive to the toxic effects of cortisol. So if you are a person who is under stress all the time, you are likely to have high cortisol levels, which means you're damaging your hippocampus.
Right.
On a positive note, when you meditate or when you do other stress reduction exercises, you not only calm your brain, you improve your brain health, and you particularly improve the health and functioning of your hippocampus. Two or three studies have shown that people who meditate for 8 weeks on a regular basis experience an increase in the size of their hippocampus. That's amazing, isn't it?
It sure is.
I tell you, Kathleen, I've been studying these things, reading these things for 25 years, and the information that have come out in the past 2 or 3 years are really stunning. They're just mind-boggling.
Mm.
And it's not just one person here or one person there. There's consistent evidence that there are many things you could do to harm your brain and make it shrink, and there are many things you could do to flourish your brain and make it stronger.
Right.
And meditation is one of the things you could do to improve your brain health.
All right, Dr. Fatui, let's go back to memorization. And you walk into that room. This has happened to everybody who's listening, I'm sure. And you've met the person, and you know the person's name, and you either call them by the wrong name, which is just horrible, or you can't call them any name because you don't want to get the wrong name. How can you remember? For me, it's even more important than phone numbers, is to remember people. So you also have techniques of how to do that. How do you memorize? How do you keep that from ever happening to you?
Yes. Well, it takes exercise. I will tell you what to do, but I'd like you to keep in mind that you can't expect results overnight. You should do it for a few weeks and you will see the results right there and then. What you need to do when you meet someone new is to look into their eyes. Just look into their eyes and repeat their names when they say it. So, for example, it's Majid Fatuhi. You say, Majid Fatuhi, that is not a common name. How do you spell that? And then I would say, F-O-T-U-H-I. So, oh, Fatuhi, thank you. And then repeat Fatuhi in your mind twice. So it will be a total of three times that you repeat the name. And as long as you look at the person and you do that, you engage the person, you will be very likely to remember the name. Then, if you really want to consolidate that name, learn something about that person. For example, I'm a neurologist, I teach, I write books, and just see me in that capacity. See me as a professor in a university, or see me as a neurologist who is talking with patients as I speak. And if you learn about something about my life, then it would be even better. We remember things that are emotional. We remember things that make us happy, sad, or make some kind of emotional impression on us. So if you listen to someone's story, chances are you're going to like them, or you may say, not my kind of person. Either way, if there's an emotion involved, you're more likely to remember their names. So basically, when you see someone, make sure you look them right in the eye and sort of look at them. Don't just glance at their whole face. Look right into their eye, repeat their name the first time, and then twice in your mind, learn something about them, and you will be amazed how easy it is to remember names. Let me give you a little story. My lovely wife, who is in her 30s, said, I can't remember names. I'm terrible with names. And I said, honey, of all people, please, you can't be the one telling me I can't remember
that
things.
That can't happen. I know.
I'm telling everybody else, and you can't be the one telling me that. So I said, I want you to change your attitude and say, I'm going to remember names. And she said, okay. So the little game we have is this. When we go to parties, receptions, gatherings, we remember and memorize every person's name. Like we go to a party with a mission. You know, we go there and it's not a competition, but, you know, we want to sort of make sure we all remember names. So when we check, you know, we check with each other, what was that person's name? Oh, that's Suzanne. No, it's Susan. And that's, you know, Harry and Henry. And so by the time we've been there a couple hours, we remember everybody's name. And she says to me that her memory for names is now better than it has ever been. So this is a common observation for me. People don't try. They don't remember names. And then it confirms their perception that they're terrible with names.
Right. Right.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
What you need to do is change your attitude and say, you know what? I am good with names. From now on, I am actually perfect with names. And then make that extra effort. When you see someone, don't let go of them until you know their names. One of the things that happens is that when you're in a conversation, they tell their names, they tell you their names, and you don't quite get it. Like, they say it quickly, and then you start talking. So you really didn't get the name in the first place. It's not that you forgot it. You never learned it. So then you'd be a little bit proactive, say, I'm sorry, can you repeat your name?
Sure.
And make sure by the time you do your handshake to say goodbye, you know their name well. If you don't, ask them one last time.
Right.
If you are a little aggressive about memorizing names, you get good at it. And what happens, Kathleen, is that after a few days or a few weeks of doing these things, your hippocampus starts to become bigger and stronger. So then you'll find that it's easier. You don't have to put that extra effort.
All right.
Please try it. Please try it.
Oh, believe me, I will.
Yeah.
And before we go back to phone calls, I've always wondered, is it related to intelligence at all? If you're smarter, do you remember names more easily?
No. There are a few people who have photographic memory, but there are very few in the sea of people who have memory issues. So it's not so much as being smarter or not smart. Memory is a skill, much like any other skill you can learn. You don't have to have special talents for memory. Everybody can have excellent memory. In our NeuroExpand Brain Center, our patients who are in their 60s and 70s often memorize a list of 100 or 200 items, forward and backwards. And, you know, Kathleen, do you think you can do that?
No.
I bet you $1,000 you can.
How can I not agree to that?
Well, come to our brain center in Baltimore, and we'll show you. And the thing is, all our patients do it. We have this extra brain capacity that we don't use on a daily basis. Most people dwell on the negative. They don't realize that their brain has a lot more space than they think it does.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we do on the short term is to help people appreciate how well they can remember things. It's really amazing. It's like I feel like going out there and screams like, people, wake up. Your brain is much better than you think it is.
It's all right. You already wrote the book. You're helping us. Let's go to Kathy next in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. I am curious what type of effects or interactions that the DHA may have on medications like Effexor and Lamictal.
Yeah, that's a very technical question that I defer to your pharmacist and physician. I can tell you that DHA is very safe. You can take high dosages and not have any complications. The one drug that you need to be careful if you're taking DHA is Coumadin or other blood thinners. Because DHA can thin your blood and improve blood flow to your brain, if you are on Coumadin, you should not take it. But I don't know any other drug-drug interactions with DHA, and I believe it's one of the safest medications you can take. It's a supplement. It's more like vitamin D or vitamin B as it is a drug.
A couple of emails have come in. Let me read both of them, and then you can respond to all. Boyd emails us, there are two things that he does, math exercises and studying foreign languages. Would you find this to be practical, or are those two overrated? And then from Lynn, who wants to know if you would recommend activities like luminosity for brain improvement.
Yes to all of them.
Okay.
Studies have shown that when you memorize a new language, especially if you do it intensely, you increase the size of your hippocampus. They did a study in Sweden in which they compared college students who were taking regular college courses versus similar age students who were in military and they're learning foreign language to go to Afghanistan or other countries in the Middle East. And they did MRIs on all of these before and after 3 months of training. In the case of college students, the college course, in the case of the soldiers, memorizing, learning a new language. And they learned that as compared to college students, those who intensely learned a language had significant increase in the size of their hippocampus, so much so that you could see on a brain MRI with a naked eye. In other words, the increase in the size and volume of hippocampus in your brain is not subtle or microscopic. Its significance is huge. And, studies have shown, for example, that medical students who prepare for their national board exam experience an increase in the size of their hippocampus. Many studies have shown over and over again that when you learn, especially if you learn a lot of information in a short period of time, you boost the size of your hippocampus.
Hmm.
As for luminosity games, I think they're helpful, but I also need to emphasize that in terms of priorities, exercise is number one factor for your brain health. Stress reduction, meditation is number two. Making sure that your B12 level is normal, your vitamin D level is normal, you don't have anemia, you don't have iron deficiency, that's the other thing that's very important. And then once you've done those things, intensely memorizing names is excellent. And then once you've done those, then you can sort of do these games. In other words, in terms of importance, playing these games is at the bottom of the list of priorities for your brain health. And on top of the list are the things I just mentioned.
We'll continue phone calls. Our guest this hour is Dr. Majid Fatoui. He is author of Boost Your Brain, The New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. By this point in the hour, I'm sure you remember that, even if you've heard it for the first time. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And you can always send Twitter as well, a tweet at K Dunn Show. Dr. Fatui is an internationally recognized neurologist. He is the author of other books. He is a teacher at Johns Hopkins and Harvard Medical School and is the recipient of the Distinguished Teaching Award from the American Academy of Neurology. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Christina in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. Thank you, doctor, for this program. I just had a question. If you have any recommendations for people that suffer from mood disorders and sleep disorders, if there's anything else they can do that wouldn't interact with medications other than DHA supplements.
Yes, the two conditions you mentioned are often related to each other. Insomnia, anxiety, depression often go hand in hand. You know, most people don't realize that these medical conditions can also be due to medical etiologies such as low B12 level or low vitamin D level or anemia. In other words, if somebody has anxiety and depression, they need a checkup to find out if there's a medical reason for it. Assuming that everything is normal, then they need to do stress reduction. Meditation is really an effective way to improve sleep and reduce the symptoms of depression. Insomnia and another condition called obstructive sleep apnea are really bad for your brain. They increase levels of cortisol, the same hormone that goes up with stress, goes up when you sleep less than 6 hours a night, or if you snore during the night and wake up with your own snoring. These need to be addressed and treated. I really prefer not to use medications as much as I can because I think it's not sustainable for people to take medications for life, and also most medications have side effects. But if your life has been really impacted, it may not be a bad idea to take an antidepressant for 3 months just to bridge you to better health.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise, meditation, DHA, counseling, socializing, dancing, all those things are excellent ways to improve your mood and how you feel about life and improve your sleep. But if you've done all of those things and you're still not doing well, you may have a primary depression disorder, and you may benefit from medications.
Thank you, Christina, for your call. Kathy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad to talk to the doctor. My feet swell. My toes sometimes feel like there's a knife there. I've gone to my doctor. I've gone to any reference he makes. They all seem to say, oh, well, that's not bad. I can't balance. I want to walk. I want to get my brain. Well, my brain's pretty good yet, but I still practice using it. But I just don't know how to get my – and I think it's neurological because my feet swell, and then at night they're better. But then when I try to walk, I start losing my balance.
It's very important for people to make sure their heart is functioning well if there's swelling in the ankle. I don't know the specifics of your medical condition, but if somebody has swelling that's worse with standing and it gets better when you're lying flat, chances are they may have a heart condition or a kidney condition. Sometimes these could be the early signs of diabetes.
Oh.
If your physician has not been able to diagnose the exact cause of your symptoms, you may want to see a different physician. You may also want to see a cardiologist. But it is very important that you be aggressive and assertive in figuring out your health conditions and don't let your body become lazy. What happens often is that when we get older, we may have knee problem, we may have back pain, there may be conditions that reduce our physical activity. And the less we move, the less blood goes to our brain and the more forgetful we become. My recommendation to my patient is fix those problems. Don't just postpone it. Don't just say, oh, I'm getting older. No. There's no such thing as getting older as, you know, as an excuse. If you have knee problem, fix it. If there's swelling, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
If one doctor can't fix it,
go to another doctor.
Yeah.
Find the doctor. I hope that's helpful, Kathy. Marsha, an email wonders what might be helpful to reverse adverse brain effects from chemotherapy treatments.
Yes, chemotherapy can have short-term and long-term impact on the brain, much like concussion or heart disease or lung disease. The treatment for what's called chemo brain is controversial. There's no specific treatment that has been universally accepted and provided for patients. My recommendations is to increase your level of physical activity, take DHA, and make sure you have a healthy body otherwise. Exercise does wonders for the brain, and I can't emphasize the importance of regular physical activity for brain health.
Sharon in Appleton, hello.
Hello, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, my question is, you talked about DHA being really good for the hippocampus. I've also heard that coconut oil can really help when you take it maybe up to 4 tablespoons a day internally, can really help with dementia and memory issues and things like that. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question. In my book and in my research, I really value double-blind placebo-controlled studies for making recommendations. In other words, I only make recommendations when I'm 100% convinced that this product or this intervention is really helpful. Coconut has not undergone double-blind placebo-controlled studies to show that it is effective. It is anecdotal evidence for the coconut oil that has gotten so many people taking it. Ginkgo biloba used to be believed to be an excellent product for health, for brain health and for cardiovascular health. Several double-blind placebo-controlled studies showed that ginkgo biloba does not improve your memory, and therefore we cannot recommend ginkgo biloba. For the same reason, I cannot recommend coconut oil.
Hmm.
Now, if you take it and you think it's helping your memory, great, you can continue to take it. But since there are no double-blind placebo-controlled studies, I cannot recommend it.
Thank you, Sharon, very much for the call. Let's go back to that phone number because I've been thinking about it and I realized I can't remember it. I think it was 401-494. I can't remember the rest of it.
0191.
0191. How do you memorize that? How do you memorize that?
I think it is really not easy to memorize things when you're on air and there are hundreds of thousands of people listening to you, without fairness. You know, you have to be in a state of mind to memorize. In terms of what to do when you want to memorize a phone number is, again, pay attention and actually look at it. I think many people find memorizing names or phone numbers easier if they see it. For example, if you see someone whose name is Joanna, but if you see the name, if they have a name tag on their chest that says Joanna and you can see it and hear it, you're more likely to remember the name than if you just hear the name. And the same applies to the phone numbers. The other thing you can do is just repeat it the old-fashioned way. You know, people used to memorize long lists by repeating it 10 times. And you may find that repeating it twice is enough for you to remember it. But one thing that you need to do that's very important is to make sure you have it memorized before you move on. In other words, if you haven't gotten it cold and solid the first time around or second time around, then don't move on until you have it in your mind. You have to know it, and you have to feel confident that you have it memorized in order for you to be able to recall it later. That's a very common mistake for people. They hear something, they say, okay, I remember it. But they don't repeat it, and they don't feel confident that they have learned it.
What about singing it?
Yes, seeing it. That's really helpful for, you know, so when I meet people and they tell me their names, especially if their name is not a typical common name, and I can't actually sit down and write it, I visualize the spelling of the names.
Mm-hmm. What about singing? Singing their names?
Oh, singing it?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. That brings me to another point. People may find that they have some techniques that work better for them as compared to other people in their family. And so if you find that singing a name or a poem helps you memorize it, then please go ahead, do it.
Okay. A listener emails, wants to know if there's any hope if you're 60 years old and have a strong family history of dementia and you're currently experiencing short-term memory loss.
That is an excellent question. If you have family members who developed dementia, Alzheimer's disease in their 50s and 60s, there's a strong possibility, about 50% chance, that you may develop Alzheimer's disease in your 50s and 60s as well. That's a bad news. Fortunately, early onset Alzheimer's disease, the type that affects people in their 50s and 60s, is rare. If your parents develop Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia in their 80s, you only have a minor increased risk of developing dementia. Just to put it in perspective, if you're 65 years old, you have 1% chance of developing Alzheimer's disease. If you have family members who develop Alzheimer's disease in their 80s, your risk is doubled to 2%, not 50%, 2%, which means there's a 98% chance you will not have it. Many people make a mistake of assuming that because their parents have Alzheimer's disease in their 80s and now they're developing memory problems in their 60s, it is just a matter of time before they become demented, and that's not correct.
Another email, a lot of people writing to us today. Christine from DeForest, how much impact does our diet have on the brain on a cellular level? Should we worry about things in foods, pesticides, dyes, or other chemicals? Is an organic diet good for the brain as well?
A Mediterranean diet has been shown to be particularly good for the brain. A diet filled with salads and nuts and salmon and other forms of fish, a glass of wine, lots of fruits and vegetables has been shown to be really good for the brain. Many of these food reduce inflammation in the brain and increase blood flow, and that's probably one reason or two reasons that they're helpful for improving your brain health. There's no evidence that organic food is better than non-organic food for the brain, although I can't say it's not. There's no documented evidence. I don't think anybody actually studied that. I think it's also a good idea to be careful about consuming food that may be high in mercury or other toxins. But on an average day, most of us have control of what we eat. And if we eat a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables and eat nuts or an orange for a snack, and have just one glass of wine with dinner, that will be perfect. We don't need to be sort of extremely careful about how many micrograms of mercury may be in the food that we have.
And finally, how can I not read this email? You'll know when I read it. Don in DePere wonders, is listening to this radio program every day while working, helping our brains go? Is being stimulated by listening to a radio program which deals with a variety of subjects and makes a person think about what's being presented? Of course the answer is yes, right, Doctor?
Of course. You want to take advantage of your downtime, like if you're driving or if you're cooking or if you're just taking a walk, and learn a new information. Because when you learn something new, you're keeping your brain toned up. You're keeping your brain active and fresh. So I recommend listening to radio stations in which you learn a lot. And, you know, public radio is one of the best ways for you to improve your brain and keep your brain active and toned up.
Oh, thank you so much. You didn't have to say it, but we only speak the truth here. Thank you.
I do listen.
It's important. I agree. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Fatui. It was really a stimulating hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our guest this hour, Dr. Fajid Fatui. His book is Boost Your Brain, The New Art and Science Behind Enhanced Brain Performance. So tomorrow, please join us. We're going to be talking with several of the actors from the Rep's new fantastic production of Ragtime. Thanks to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour.